Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There's a couple points to finish the topic of ghusl. One is that there are a number of mustahab ghusls that I won't mention all of them. The most important one of them that some have even considered wajib is ghusl al-jum'ah. It's very, very extremely recommended. It's very beneficial. But the reason why I mention that is that unlike Ayatollah Sistani, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, these ghusls don't count for wudu, just like the other wajib ghusls as well. Any or no ghusl except for ghuslul janabah counts for wudu according to the fatwa of Ayatollah Khamenei. The next discussion is something that is in common between wudu and ghusl, and that is jabira. Okay. Sometimes I have a wound on my body. Okay. Or I have something on my body that I can't wash that body part that I'm supposed to be washing for wudu or for ghusl. It doesn't make a difference. If it's just a wound on my body that I cannot wash it itself, it's harmful for water to touch, to reach it, I can wash around it. And that'll suffice. That's going to be enough. I wash every part of the hand except for that part. And it's better to have put a cloth over that and wipe over that part with a wet hand. You don't wash it, you wipe it, just like you do the head or the feet. But that's better to make sure everything is fine. But washing around it is going to be sufficient. But if there's something that is covering the skin, whether it's bandage covering a wound, okay, or it's for some other reason it's there, it depends why, what it's there for, and if it can be removed or it can't be removed. If it's because of a wound, all right, if it's not harmful to remove it and to wash underneath, then we should do that. If it is harmful to remove it or we can't remove it, we just leave it there and we wash over it. And if even washing that, if it is possible for us to not, you know, remove it, but to have enough water to wash through that cloth that is covering the wound, then we should do so if it's not harmful. If it is harmful, then we don't wash it, we just wipe over it with a wet hand. If what is covering the wound is covering a little too much, normally if you have a little cut here that you need a Band-Aid on it, when you put the Band-Aid, it's going to cover a little more. That's fine. That's not problematic. But if it's covering too much more than what the wound is, what the cut is, then we would have to perform tayammum and wudu as ihtiyat as well. Okay. If there's something that's covering our skin that is blocking the water from reaching the skin, it's a small amount, and we can't remove it. It's just not possible for us to remove it. We make wudu over that. And if it's too much, okay, if it's a huge area, if it covers the entire body part, then we would have to, you know, except for like the hands, we would have to perform a tayammum. But usually when we have those little bits, if we can't remove it, we should try to remove it. If we can't, then we just wash over it and do wudu jabira, it is called. That's the last part of wudu and ghusl that I wanted to talk about. Next we have the concept of tayammum. When is tayammum going to be a replacement for ghusl and wudu? There are about 7 cases that are mentioned that tayammum is going to replace wudu or ghusl. Okay. Not all of them would apply. Basically, if we don't know of any water in our vicinity, okay, there's very particular numbers given that usually don't apply to us, which we live in cities, you know, you have water available, you know that the next rest area you'll be, even if you're traveling, you know the next rest area you'll be able to get some water, or there's a gas station somewhere you can get off the exit and get some water from there. Usually that doesn't apply to us, but if we don't have any means to travel like that, and we don't know of any water in our vicinity, okay, we don't hope to find any water until the end of time, then we are making tayammum. Other points are mentioned. I don't want to get into all of that. The ones that mainly apply to us is this. If there's not enough time, okay, whether we intentionally delayed the prayer or we forgot that we hadn't prayed, or we were najis and we were waiting to become tahir, for whatever reason we've delayed the prayer and we don't have enough time to perform wudu, if wudu is wajib, or ghusl, if ghusl is wajib, or wudu and ghusl in the cases where we would have to do both of them, we don't have enough time to do that and to be able to get the prayer in, then we would have to perform tayammum instead of wudu to be able to do the prayer during the time. Also, if we're not sure, if we are not sure, it's towards the end of time, I get up, I'm not sure if I have enough time to do my wudu and do my fajr prayer, okay. In that case too, I'm supposed to do tayammum. If I can't clarify quickly, I'm afraid I'm going to lose the time, I'm not going to be able to pray during the time, I quickly make tayammum and perform my prayer. Obviously, if afterwards I realize that the prayer was outside of time, then the tayammum I did not count, the prayer I did not count, I have to do wudu and perform the prayer all over again. But the idea is, what do we do in the cases where we're not sure? Do we have to go spend 5 minutes to find out whether we have time or not? No. If we have the doubt, there's a possibility that we're going to lose the time of prayer, then we quickly make tayammum and perform that prayer. That's one of the main reasons. The other main reason that may apply to us is where water is harmful for us to use. Okay, we can't wash our face or our hands or our, the wiping usually we wouldn't have a problem with, but if we can't do that, if the wiping too we have a problem on the feet or on the head, then that would have the same ruling, but mainly we would have a problem with washing. If there's a problem, we can't wash, it's harmful for us to wash, the water is harmful for our body, we don't perform wudu, we make tayammum. Also, there is water available, and water itself is not harmful for me, but it is either harmful or it causes substantial difficulty that people don't take, don't bear. It's philosophically possible, but people don't bear that type of difficulty, that amount of difficulty usually, although they can, rationally speaking. If it causes that, which is called haraj, to get to that water, in other words, the water is there, I know where it is, but my car has broken down. Okay, I can get to the rest area, but my car is broken down, I can't either. If I want to walk all that distance, it's too far. It's possible, but it's too far. It's haraj, and I would have to leave my car, and I would have to leave my other stuff here. It is extremely difficult. In that case too, I'm allowed to make tayammum instead of wudu or ghusl. Those are the cases where tayammum would be a necessary replacement for wudu or ghusl. The other discussion in tayammum is, what can you make tayammum on? Okay, this is important. There's a difference of opinion between the maraja. According to Ayatollah Sistani and others, or many others like Imam Khomeini too, of course I'll take back Ayatollah Sistani, but I would have to recheck that. But many of the fuqaha don't believe that you can make it on processed or, in a way, baked, if that's the right word to use, minerals like chalk, okay, or cement, okay, that goes through that process. You can't make that, or bricks, okay, you can't make tayammum on bricks. But according to Ayatollah Khamenei, all of that is allowed, okay. So if you want to make tayammum on bricks, that's fine. On concrete, on the cement, that's fine. You can make tayammum on that. It will count. On anything else, anything from the ground, this dirt, soil, that counts based on all Maraja's view. If you have stones that are natural stones, that also counts. Of course, not jewelry, according to Ayatollah Khamenei. Of course, I don't know if you can find a jewelry that's big enough to be able to perform tayammum. We'll explain what that means. But anyhow, any natural stone we can perform tayammum on, soil, anything from the earth itself. Not plants that grow from it, but anything from the earth itself, even if it goes through that process like concrete and cement and bricks and all of that, it is allowed for us to make tayammum on. How do we perform tayammum? According to Ayatollah Khamenei, because again, there's a difference of opinion. You need to, the first step is touching or getting our hands to that, to the earth, okay, the soil or the stone or whatever it may be. How do we do that? It's not enough to rub our hands or just put our hands on the ground. We can't do that, okay? We have to hit it, okay? Both hands together, you hit ground or the stone or the bricks or whatever it is, then you do the tayammum. What is the tayammum after hitting the ground or the stone or the bricks, whatever it is? We have got to wipe three parts of our body. One is the forehead. The forehead meaning, they call this the jabha. Okay, this front part is the jabha. These are called the jabinain, the sides of the head. All of that has got to be wiped. Okay. With the palms of our hands, not the back part, with the palms of our hands after hitting the ground, we are supposed to wipe from where the hair grows down to the eyebrows, and the sides also we have to rub that. So we go like that, make sure we've wiped it all, that's fine, until where the nose begins, okay, that all that has to be done. What about the eyebrows themselves? It's an ihtiyat, a recommended precaution, you go over them as well, but it's not necessary. So you go over the eyebrows as well, just to be on the safe side. So from the top where the hair grows all to the sides, and the eyebrows to me on the safe side, and this tip here down to here you have to go. That is the head piece where we're supposed to perform the tayammum. After that, we remove all our rings or anything else we have on our hands that's blocking the back side of the hand from the wrist down to the tips of the fingers. You're supposed to wipe the exterior, okay, of the hand between the fingers. None of that, you don't have to worry about it, or these grooves between the fingers. No, just go like that. That's enough. Okay, the right hand with the palm of the left hand, and then the same with the right hand. You use the right hand to wipe the back of the left hand, and that's the tayammum. It's finished, and we have tahara if the conditions were done right. And obviously, we have to make the intention. The same as wudu and ghusl, we have to have the intention. Some of the other things to keep in mind is the order. You have to keep that order. First, it's the head, then the right hand, then the left hand. Also, the same as wudu, this is not like ghusl that you could separate. You could do one part of the ghusl and then go 2 hours later do the rest of it. You can't do that on tayammum. You have to do them consecutively, one right after the other. Of course, not a split second, but Urfan, they have to say, you know, this is one process that we started and ended. Can't separate between the two parts for like 2-3 minutes, any more than 2-3 minutes. The other thing is that we need to do it. We can't have somebody else do it. Of course, if it's not possible, then the other person comes and does it, but when the other person wants to help us, they would have to use my hands, if possible. Okay, if I was disabled and I can't use my hands, somebody has to take my hands, hit it on whatever it is, then bring it up, wipe my forehead, and then the back of my hands. If that's not possible, then he uses his own hands. One point that people may have in their minds, if tayammum is performed with the conditions, and we pray with that, that prayer does not have to be made up later on. Okay. The tayammum that is performed because we didn't have water, as long as we don't have water, then the tayammum is going to be valid. We can perform all kinds of mustahab prayers. The next prayer that becomes wajib, the next prayer time that comes, we can perform prayer with that. Touching the Holy Quran, all of that is going to count. But the prayer, the tayammum that was performed because of the shortage in time, after that prayer is done, then it doesn't count for anything else. We would have to make tayammum, wudu or ghusl in order to become mutatahhir. I'm going to quickly go over, that's the end of tahara min al-hadath. Okay, discussions that I wanted to cover in tahara min al-hadath. Ghusl, tayammum and wudu is finished. Now we want to move on to tahara and the apparent purity or being pure, being clean, the cleansiness. And the first discussion we have there is what are the unclean things? What are the najasat? If we know what the najasat are, okay, then anything else is going to be tahir. There's a number of nijasat that we have. There's nine of them that I will mention right now. Urine and feces from any animal, pay attention to the conditions. Okay, there's different conditions for each one. Urine and feces are najas if it is from an animal, from a human being or an animal that has got gushing blood. Okay, that's the criterion. Human beings, what's a human? Animals, you have animals that have got gushing blood and you have animals that don't. This term is used a lot. Okay, so I'll explain it a bit. If an animal is killed, slaughtered, if the blood starts to gush out, that is called what they call nafsun sa'ilah. Okay, it's got gushing blood, that's what we mean. But animals like reptiles, if you kill them, there's no blood gushing out. There's no actual blood either. If you want to call it blood, that's something else. But if you cut it, if the animal is cut, then you don't see any blood gushing out, at least. Fish, they don't have gushing blood, so that's not going to be najas. A fish tank is not najas. So the likes of sheep, goats, obviously dogs, we'll talk about dogs later on, cats, all of these, the feces and the urine are going to be najis. That was the first condition. Okay, the second condition, that was the gushing blood. The second condition is that they don't have halal meat. Okay, their meat is haram. Okay. Now, meat being haram could be because of two things. One is the animal is considered haram in and of itself. Okay. Like cats, okay, squirrels, all kinds of other animals you could think of. You can't eat them. It's haram, so their urine and feces is going to be najis. A halal animal like sheep, like goats, like camels, cows, these halal animals, they're halal, so they don't have this condition, so the urine and feces are not going to be najas, unless they become what they call jallal. Jallal means an animal, okay, in villages where they have animals, if an animal is accustomed to feeding off of human feces, okay, that animal is going to be considered jallal. It becomes haram for us to eat if it's slaughtered. It has to go through a process of internal cleaning. But anyhow, if an animal is like that, okay, they're accustomed to eating off of human feces for a number of days, then they the urine and feces are going to be najis. One exception from this, according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwa, of course, to the urine and feces of animals that are haram, are birds. Okay, birds that have got gushing blood, their urine and feces are not going to be najis. Even the ones that are haram meat. Those are the first two najas. The next one is semen is najas from a human being or any animal that has got gushing blood. Okay, this one does not have the condition of the animal having haram meat. Whether it has haram meat or it doesn't have haram meat, okay. In other words, semen from sheep or goats, whatever, that is going to be considered najis. The fourth najis is a dead corpse that we talked about, a human being, or any animal that has got gushing blood. The body parts of the mita that we're talking about are the body parts that have got that are living. So the fur, the wool, the nails, the tusks of an elephant, or the horns. None of that is najis. The teeth, that's not najis. Okay. What is najis is the body parts that possess life. That's the fourth najas. The fifth one is blood from the human being or any animal that has got gushing blood again. The condition is not that they have haram meat too, as long as they have gushing blood. So the blood from a sheep, okay, when it's slaughtered, that blood is najas. We can't not only can we not eat it, because even if it wasn't najis, we wouldn't be able to eat blood. It's haram to eat, but it's najis. The blood that remains in the animal after it's slaughtered, after all the, you know, after you let it bleed, whatever remains in, it's not considered najis any longer. But what the blood that gushes out, or if they're not slaughtered, but you know they have a wound, there's a bleeding, the blood gets onto us, is going to be najis. Dogs and pigs, okay, are najis. Every millimeter of their body is najis. The hair, the body, the nails, everything is najis. Whether it's on them or it's separated from them, it gets onto our clothes, it gets into the washing machine, it remains there, it makes everything najis. The eighth najis is a non-Muslim that is not Ahlul Kitab. Okay, non-Muslim that is not Ahlul Kitab. Ahlul Kitab, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, are Jews, Christians, Zoroastrians, and Sabians. Okay, Sabians, of course, there's two groups of people that consider themselves Sabians. The Sabians that consider themselves followers of Prophet Yahya, they are the ones that are considered Ahlul Kitab. So, these are the Ahlul Kitab. Ahlul Kitab, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, are not najis, but non-Ahlul Kitab are considered najis. The ninth of the najasat is alcoholic beverages, according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwa. Any liquid that is intoxicating, that the original state of it, when it was first intoxicating, is liquid form, then that is najis. So if you have something that is intoxicating and it's actually solid, and you add that to water and it's a liquid that is intoxicating, that is not najis. But if it's in the first stage of it being intoxicating, is in liquid form, like beer and wine and champagne and liquor and all of that stuff, it is going to be considered najis. Those are the nijasat. The rest of the discussion in Taharat min al-Khabath we would have to leave for tomorrow, inshallah. Recite a salawat, and then if there's any questions, we'll take.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
According to Ayatollah Khamenei, the alcohol in perfumes, if you know that it meets the qualification for it to be najis, okay, then it is najis. But if you have doubt that in the first stage of it being an intoxicant, it was in liquid form, then that doubt is enough. You don't consider it najis, and you don't have to research it either. Yes, you had a hand up.
This was a question. I think yesterday you talked about wudu. When you're wiping your feet, what's the minimum of wiping?
The minimum in terms of the width is one finger. The width of one finger. No, the width of one finger when you're wiping. Okay. Not one toe, one finger.
Does it have to touch one toe?
It has to go from the tip of one of the toes all the way to the joint. Okay. In terms of the length, okay, it goes, that's the length that we explained, but the width, it doesn't have to cover the whole foot, or you don't have to use the whole hand. Just one finger is going to be enough. Yes?
You're talking about
Tayammum?
Yeah. If you want tayammum and you crave, if later you have water and you want to come like, you know, to the nation, do you have to do the wudu?
Yes, now that you found water, you have to perform the wudu. Yes?
Is the duruz considered Mahlul Kitab?
No, duruz are not considered Mahlul Kitab. Or,
how about eating from.
Or duruz, aren't they Muslims?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so they're Muslims. They're category Muslims. Any Muslim, even if they're deviant groups, as long as they're not nasibis, okay, or mujassima, people that consider God having a body, they actually state that, you know, which is shirk. Unless they're like that, then they would be considered tahir. They're Muslim and they're tahir. Na'am? Alaykum as-salam.
For the Druze as a specific category of Muslims, because I am Lebanese and we know basically they exist uniquely in Syria, Lebanon, and Palestine.
That's right.
And it's hard to say that they are Tahir because they have some weird beliefs. And usually they do not believe in the prophethood originally of Muhammad.
Really?
Although they say they do not call themselves Muslims, but Muwahideen.
If they don't, see, the criterion for Islam, this is based on my information, I was told that there, if a person believes in Tawheed and the prophethood of Prophet Muhammad and Ma'ad, okay, if that's the case, then they're considered Muslim, okay, even if the rest of their belief is messed up, their practices are messed up. But if you're saying they don't even believe in the prophethood of our Prophet, then that's a different story.
That's the problem, it's esoteric, they deny that, they say we are Muslim, but... Where are your books? When we go to their book, there is nothing mentioned about the prophethood of Muhammad.
Well, see, books, I don't know. This is, first of all, our discussion, let me clarify, is about a mawdu, okay? Does the subject Muslim, does it apply to a person that is Druze or not? Okay, or Druze considered Muslim or not? You have to gather your information, see if they are Muslim or they're not Muslim. I'm trying to clarify the ruling regarding what is considered Muslim and what is not. Whether it applies there or not, you would probably know better because you're in direct contact with them. Just to clarify the ruling, if it's not found in the books necessarily, that doesn't mean much. Because if you look in some of the Shia books, you'll find some things that may contradict what we actually believe in. Okay, just because it's in our books or it's not in our books, that doesn't make... it. You have to see that individual. Does he believe in Allah, in the prophethood of the Prophet or not? If they say that we do, they say, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, wa ashhadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah, whether it's found in the books or not, they're considered Muslim. Unless you've seen otherwise, they tell you in your face that Ashhadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah, but you know that in other locations they say, oh, we're just joking around with them. Right, in reality, we don't believe in that.
Maulana, they have a book called Al-Hikmah, the wisdom, and this is considered their main book. But I went to their website, Druze.net. There are a bunch of beliefs that are un-Islamic, specifically reincarnation and other. We can go, and anybody can go to Druze.net and study their beliefs.
If those are their beliefs, then yeah, they would. If they don't believe in the Prophet or of the Prophet.
Some people call themselves Shia, and they are very different.
The criterion, as I said, I don't want to talk about a specific group of people. The Druze, I don't know them. If you know them, then fine. The criterion is if anyone believes, actually, in the prophethood of Prophet Muhammad, in Tawheed, in Ma'ad, they are Muslim. Yes?
Okay, I have two questions from online. One question is, when you touch a dog, how do you perform Tahara, purity, propriety? And my second question is can I shake a hand while wearing gloves?
We haven't gotten to the discussion of interaction with the opposite gender. But anyway, I'll answer the first question, but the second question I'll leave for the other. Unless they can't come online on that day, I'll answer that right now. Purifying or making tahir, we haven't discussed the mutahirat either. Okay, the question is about how to make tahir an individual, their hand that they've touched a dog with. How do you make that tahir? There's no difference between the najasat in washing the hands. Okay, the difference is when a dish, okay, a container, a bowl, okay, a pan or a pot, if a dog licks from it, okay, or drools into that, then there's a special way of making a tahir. But just touching a dog is just najas. You just wash your hands.
Because there were some confusion. I've heard people say the way you clean the dishes, the way you even clean yourself too. Like
No. There's difference. If a pig licks out of a container or a dish, then again, there's special rules of how to make that tahir. It's not the same as... And also other things, other najasat, sometimes you would have to wash the container three times, whereas if that najas was on your hand, you would have to only wash it once. The rulings of washing dishes is different than washing clothes or even hands or things like that.
Eating from non-Ahlul Kitab at their house, if you were invited?
Eating at non-Ahlul Kitab, again, we're going to be discussing that, but the general ruling for najasat and taharat, okay, is that as long as you don't know something is najas, then technically you don't have to consider it najas. Okay, if you want to do ihtiyat, that's fine, but as long as you haven't seen this particular dish or food being touched with a wet hand, you're not, well, not seeing, I won't put it in the, as long as you're not sure that this dish or glass of water or food that I have in front of me, as long as I'm not sure that they have touched it with wet hands, okay, technically it's tahir. If it's tahir, then I can eat from it. If you want to do ihtiyat, that's fine too. Okay, shall we go for salat? Recite a salawat, please.